Today on Movie Wallahs, we talk about Crimson Peak and Room. It's time for Movie Wallahs. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And yes, you as well.
Movie Wallahs is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Greetings, all.
Hello.
Hello.
We've managed to eat five pies since the last podcast.
Since the last podcast.
We only had five pies.
We had five pies.
No, they were like, the pies have a diameter of like an inch each.
They're delicious.
They are good.
They are delicious.
Especially because we were like, no, we're not hungry.
I know. Well, Yazdi is always a very gracious host. Of the reason we come to his house to record the podcast.
We're hungry.
Is because we know we're going to get like delicious snacks.
If there is a nuclear holocaust, everyone come to my home.
There will be Trader Joe's.
There will be little pies and delicious tea.
Thank you very much, Yazdi. Most tasty.
Most tasty.
And there's going to be a fight over that last pie.
It's Yazdi's. We've already had two.
I know it's Yazdi's, but he's too polite. He's going to let one of us have it, and we're going to have to argue over it.
Had peach.
Damn.
I'm going to take a picture of the pie and Instagram it, and probably won't anyway, but I'm going to take a picture of that last poor pie and put
it
up on the website.
It's not a poor pie.
Well, it will be in a minute. Okay.
Okay.
Enough banter.
Yes.
Well, actually, I did want to talk about movie theatres because
We were
disappointed not so long ago with a couple of the more established theatres in San Diego closing down, in particular the Landmark in La Jolla, was one, and then the Ken Cinemas really having a fight to survive. I think it has managed to pull through its imminent closure threat, but nonetheless, it's a time when we've all been worried about theatres going away and cinema ticket sales are down. So I was delighted to hear that there's two new movie theatres opened up in town, which is awesome.
Yeah.
The Angelica, which is not too far from where I work, which is a luxury theatre. And then we have The Lot in La Jolla that I think has opened.
On Fay Avenue, yeah.
Oh, it used to be the old La Jolla movie house there, right?
Correct.
Or they reopened it.
Yeah, and it's called The Lot. And actually, the Angelica is part of, like, the Angelica from New York.
Yeah. And it's a very prestigious cinema line. They show, I mean, they have every month, they have a Ghibli festival going on. They're showing a Miyazaki movie every other week. They show, like, from the Met, they show, live productions. You can pay $20 and watch them, and it's like, in real time, it's
too many movies.
So yeah, it's quite
terrific.
Time.
But I'm really glad, and I think it's part of this new trend of these kind of upscale movie theaters. So I think things are changing. If you like going to the theater to watch movies, which you probably do because you listen to the show,
or you like hearing about pie.
But no, they're all doing these kind of lazy boy seating and food and alcohol. It makes it a very adult experience, but I'm loving it. I'm really pleased to see that they're not going away.
I think as people realize it takes a lot, especially for a family, to get out and go watch a movie in the cinemas, that you have to make it special. You have to make it an event. And if you can bring your glass of wine into the movie, if you have nice seats, it becomes something nice you can do other than just go and watch a movie in a crappy theater.
Yeah.
So I think I'm glad that whole model is changing towards this slightly more luxurious way of watching movies as an option.
And it's an event. I mean, I think there's a lot to be said for seeing, we all want to see the 3D IMAX boom, boom, Dolby Atmos movies in the theater. There's no way to get that experience at home, and I get that. But there's a huge argument to watch even a documentary in a theater, or
which sounds good and has a good screen and comfortable seating.
Right, but just the environment, the focus that you get in a movie theater with the removal of everything else in the world other than the film, I think, has always been a very special place for me. So I love watching a movie in a movie theater. I mean, that's a silly thing to say, but it is better than on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane.
Absolutely.
Yay for more theaters.
Yes.
May this trend continue. Okay, two movies to talk about this week, Crimson Peak and Room. I'm having a trouble remembering Room because there's no the with Room.
Or
it's
a.
Just Room. So, or A, right. There's no, what's the word, preposition? So where should we go first?
Crimson Peak.
Off we go.
Okay, so in the aftermath of a family tragedy, an aspiring author is torn between love for her childhood friend and the temptation of a mysterious outsider. Trying to escape the ghosts of her past, she's swept away to a house that breathes, bleeds, and remembers. So this is Guillermo del Toro bringing us horror. And it's written by Guillermo del Toro and Matthew Robbins. And this stars the wonderful Mia Wasikowska, the wonderful Jessica Chastain, and the very handsome Tom Hiddleston. So, Yazdi, why don't you kick us off? Because I know you don't like horror. And but, actually, both of our movies this week are...
But he is the Guillermo del Toro fanboy.
Correct.
That's what I was going to say. I'm a huge Guillermo del Toro fan. I mean, I'll watch anything he does. I mean, he can do no wrong as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, remember, like, weeks before this movie was coming out, I was telling you guys, oh, my God, this looks really scary, but I'm going to still watch it because it's del Toro.
I know, and I was shocked.
Yes, and I watched it, and it's not the movie I expected, but the movie has such beautiful production design, and this movie is like, I'm frankly shocked that the studios gave him the money to make this movie, because it's so old-fashioned. It's his homage to all those little movies that he grew up with as a child, and he's painstakingly recreated it. The movie in many ways feels like a lost movie from the late 60s or mid 70s, and he's beautifully recreated it. So I love it for its sumptuousness, even though in terms of plot or revelations, it does not do anything new for me. But what a treat for the eyes. What a treat for the eyes.
And did you lose any sleep? Maybe that's how we should judge our horror movies. How much sleep did you lose?
No sleep lost.
Okay.
And there's a reason for that, but we'll talk about that.
Joe.
So, yeah, just in summary, I'm not a huge Guillermo del Toro fan. I really enjoyed Pacific Rim from a year or two ago, but again, that was, you know, more of the bots and the anime type thing that I enjoyed rather than the Guillermo del Toro-ness of it all. Pan's Labyrinth was a movie that I really struggled with. Perhaps I wasn't in the mindset, and I know Yazdi and I will come to fisticuffs when it comes to discussing
Pan's Labyrinth. You and me outside. No, come on.
I'll have the pie.
Hey. You should have just taken it. But this movie is kind of interesting. I mean, it's hopelessly underplotted. I mean, the story is, it's not there. It goes exactly the way you expect it to, and it goes to exactly where you expected it to go. And there was no drama in the plot for me. On the other hand, what a sumptuous, glorious, technically beautifully shot use of color and atmosphere. What a great place. And we were talking about watching movies in theaters. This was a terrific theater experience. It's not in 3D, but up on the big screen in a dark environment, in the focus and the quiet that you have in a movie theater, this was just a fabulous experience. So I really did enjoy this film.
So what's happening to us? We're agreeing a lot recently. So apart from Steve Jobs, which, yeah. Okay, so I think this is one of the best genre mashup movies ever. Way better than Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
Sure.
This is more like Jane Eyre meets Sixth Sense. I loved it. This is quite good, but the word elegant and charming kept coming up. Mm-hmm. Not as elegant in the way of filmmaking like I described Bridge of Spies, but elegant to look at. Elegant in the way that it's acted. Elegant in the way that it's all spoken. And Jessica Chastain, Mia Wasikowska, and Tom Hiddleston are all very elegant in this movie. And it's all to do with the production and the costume and the stunning saturated color that we get to see. Beautiful cinematography. There's this incredible scene near the end of the movie where there's like literally white snow and what looks like blood
coming out, yeah.
Oh my goodness. It's beautiful to look at, and I never thought I'd say those words together in a sentence. So, you know, it's not a scary horror, but it's got some gotcha moments, and
It's very violent.
It's very violent, and
I'd like to talk about that,
but
too.
I do like how the house is kind of a character of its own.
It absolutely is, yeah. I mean, there's one other thing, so I completely agree with you. There's one other thing which I really liked about the movie, which is that for something so old-fashioned and so, you know, it's he's almost laying with his head down at the feet of Hitchcock and Rebecca and Notorious, and it kind of reminds you of those kinds of movies. Even while he's doing it, the script is so meta. I love the script in this movie because, you know, people say things like, it's not a ghost story. It's a story with a ghost in it. Or somebody says, you know, the ghost is only a metaphor for the past.
Yes.
It's
like, I love that line.
Yeah, because what he's giving you is he's telling you, this is the instruction manual that comes with this story. This is how you interpret it. I mean, at one point, Mia Wasikowska says, I don't want to close my eyes. I want to keep them open. Which is what, you know, what people close their eyes when they're watching a horror movie. I mean, there's so many... There's one other piece of line. Perhaps we only see things when it's time to see them. You know, there's all these little pieces thrown in which are kind of instructions for the jaded horror movie watcher, you know. And I like that he's kind of turning. He knows he's making a movie which is completely playing it by the books in terms of the plot. But it's kind of self-aware about it, I think.
Yet it's poetic, right? Yet it's poetic. And there's this kind of like magnificent love story in the background. And it's all very grand.
Yassi's point was completely lost on me in the moment. And I think now that I think about it, it kind of makes a bit more sense. Because you're right. It is self-aware in a way. And that's why I thought the plot was a little too out there on the table. I mean, I was expecting to have a little more drama and intrigue. And essentially, the whole movie is laid out from start to finish with the words spoken by the very first ghost. I mean, from that point forward, I knew how this was going to go. And that kind of irritated me. But I wanted to talk about two things. One is the horrorness of it, because you know, Guillermo del Toro is somewhat infamous for monsters not being scary. And I did, you know, pick up on an interview that was done with him where he spoke about monsters as a child, that he made some sort of deal with them, that if they left him alone, he would leave them alone. He would
show them in a good light.
And monsters in his movies, Pan's Labyrinth, for example, are not necessarily the bad guys,
right?
The evil spirits. And you know, this movie again continues many of those sort of themes. But did you guys think it was scary? Because I think this movie very much has been marketed as a horror film. When you look at trailers and you see the ghosts and the terrors in the house,
it's not frightening in a way like The Evil Dead, but it's got some twisty turny, I want to close my eyes, I don't quite want to keep them open moments.
I don't know. I had my eyes closed a lot of the
time. Did you? Yeah. And it's something very mysterious, right?
And the music,
I like
the
mystery.
Yeah, the music is like all blaring and clangy, and you know, I mean,
it's got the haunted house thing going on. I mean,
totally got the and you know, I mean, he's such a fanboy. He is in love with those old movies. I mean, how many scenes are there in this movie of poor Mia Wasikowska walking through a dark hallway with a candle? There must be 14 scenes. He just loves the image of women in frilly costumes walking dark hallways with candles, you know, waiting to see what's there when she turns the corner. So he's so in love with that whole thing that I kind of saw the thrill and fun. It's almost cute in a way.
Yeah.
But it's scary. It's got some pretty scary moments. And my only complaint is the ghosts looked awfully CGI to me. Really, really CGI. They were very black and tarry. And, you know, the visual look was kind of pulled me out of everything else in the movie, which was so grand and old-fashioned. I almost expected like velvet curtains, you know, on the side of the screen,
right,
in terms of what was filming. So.
And what about the violence? Because I think I was caught off guard at several points in this movie with just how graphic and visceral and bone crunching and wince inducing the violence was. I mean, for something so beautifully crafted in this old fashioned style, then you have this very, very modern
Tarantino-esque.
That's not quite what I would say, but you've got this modern theme that we have of broken heads, you know,
yeah,
working their way into this plot.
So I think the horror, in a way, just to answer that last question and to link it to this one, is the horror almost comes from what people do to other people,
mm-hmm.
right? When they act out of fear or love, I think, yeah. And it's at its core.
And I don't think it's consistently violent. I think it saves all its violence for the very last act, not even the act, the very last, maybe the last 15 minutes when there's a lot of bloodletting. And I think it's intentional because it kind of, you know, lulls you into believing it's one of those old-fashioned movies, and then suddenly things get, you know, really nasty,
nasty.
Really quickly. So,
yeah.
So I think it's kind of meant to kind of surprise you a little bit.
Okay.
I did wince. There were a few bone-crunching moments.
Yes. I mean, I kept writing little notes in my book with little theories of what I thought was going to happen. And I'm actually happy to say that 90% of them didn't work their way, which means that there was surprises. It's not such a predictable plot, but it's fairly predictable.
It's very predictable, yeah. And the other thing, you know, this is true for every horror movie, but, you know, the biggest actor in this movie, the biggest character in the movie is the house, right?
Right.
It is. I mean, it's a marvel of production design. But my point is...
now a universal ride.
Right. My point is, I'm putting myself in the Edith, I think her name was Edith, in her shoes. At what point does it become too creepy? It seems that she never crossed that line. I mean, how much worse? I mean, my point is, after 10 minutes in that home, I would have like run out like a screaming 13-year-old girl, like, "Aah!"
Check me into Holiday Inn. I'm not staying here again.
I'm like, I'm not staying here. I mean, my point is, this horrible things are happening, and that line is not, things just never get creepy enough for her. I'm like, what? I mean, how many nights?
But she's in love.
But how many nights do you have to stay there before you get like, you realize this is just too creepy? Shit's going on over here. Get out of here.
I think they attempt to address that by making her character not afraid of ghosts. I mean, she says that at the beginning.
Mm.
And so when you're dealing with a place that's inherently creepy, she's not fazed by
that.
She's
like, oh, no, you didn't.
Not in the version of the movie that I saw, but...
But okay, yeah. Anything else on this one?
Oh, boy. So how to rate this one? This, again, struggle. It's a directorial triumph. I mean, I think it really looks and feels and puts you in a place that's exactly where the director wanted you to be. I just felt that the plot was a little too... underwritten. I wanted more. I wanted surprises in the characters. I wanted the characters to have more arcs. You know, instead we were just transported to this wonderful visual place with, you know, stark contrasts of black and white and red and yellow. Did anyone catch the canary in the cage analogy?
Yes.
When she was in the elevator?
Yes.
You know, this is a beautifully thought out visual movie, but
poetic. Sorry.
More than that, you know, so I'm going to give it a 7, and that's up from the 6 that my instinct kind of tells me. But at the end of the day, I have to acknowledge that I enjoyed the heck out of this movie.
Yes, Dee.
Yeah, as a Del Toro fan, I have to admit this is no Pan's Labyrinth. This is not the best movie he's ever made, but I see it as a lovely, cute little homage, you know, that he's made to all those movies that he loved as a child and he wanted to recreate. And he does it beautifully. There is not a single scene in this movie which is makeshift, which is made by first assistant director or second assistant director. This is a person who has slavished lovingly over the look and, you know, every little object which is in the frame, you know, of every scene. And, you know, the production design is just so yummy. That alone wins me over. So, 7.5 out of 10 for me, and I don't know. Don't ask me to go to 8 or to 7. It's a 7.5. It's
Dude.
Just. It's,
you know, the rules.
You know, I mean,
you will be visited by a spectre tonight.
I mean,
the spectre will be me.
I mean, I think this is the movie that Hollywood.
Get off the fence.
Okay, 7. This is the movie that Hollywood lets Del Toro make between his Hellboy movies and between, you know, his work on, you know, the Hobbit movies. So. He gets to make it.
Rashmi. Yeah, I agree with you. This is a really hard one to score because I don't know if I'm scoring it for scariness or scoring it for movie experience. But I'll do it for movie experience. I agree. I think it's a 7, and it's a good 7. I think this is a scary horror that's not so frightening, but it's stunning to look at and really well acted. My God, that Mia Wasikowska. Yeah, her too. she can act.
And Chastain.
Is a bit, you know what? We didn't talk about it very much. A little bit too much drama going on there for me.
Yeah, she ordered but she had to.
A little bit overcooked. But my God, Mia
Wasikowska,
she's really good. She's really good. I can't say I can see her getting any Oscar love for this, but she's a good, good actress. I wish she'd do something modern time, though.
Yeah. The last, yeah. She does a lot of films.
She does a lot of period stuff.
She was in Tracks, but that was...
And she was in The Double. Was it The Double with Jesse Eisenberg?
Yeah, she was in The Double. She was
But that was futuristic.
Yeah, she was in The Kids Are All Right. She was in all kinds of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Jane Eyre. Jane Eyre, yes.
Okay. Moving on to movie number 2, which is Room. And it's not The Room or A Room. It's just Room.
So, Irish director Lenny Abrahamson, who previously made the movie Frank, which came out last year, and kind of didn't make a lot of noise, but it had
Fassbender.
Michael Fassbender in it. He returns with...
Brilliant performance by Fassbender in that.
Yes, yes. Great performance by Fassbender. Anyway. But he returns, Lenny Abrahamson returns to direct the movie Room. And it's based on a very popular novel by Emma Donoghue. And... a lot of the movie's experience relies on how much you know about it, or actually how little you know of it. So I'm going to be deliberately very careful and just state that what you find in the first 5 minutes of the movie is that a little boy who is 5 years old, Jack, is living in a room with his mother, and they spend all of their time together. And it's very obvious that that little kid has never strayed outside of that room. He's only ever lived in that room. And from that premise, the rest of the movie unfolds. The movie stars Jacob Tremblay as the little boy Jack, as well as Brie Larson in the title role of Ma. And then the movie also has a great supporting cast, which includes William H. Macy, as well as Joan Allen. This was one of the smaller movies which has been getting a lot of buzz over the festival circuit, and I think it opens fairly soon. What do you guys think about Room?
So let's talk about a horror. I mean, this is... tragic and beautiful and heartbreaking and soul-destroying and effective with a capital E. Please give these two leads their Oscars already. Phenomenal movie. Phenomenal. That rocked my soul. This movie literally rocked my soul.
Yeah, I mean, a testament to the level of filmmaking here is just how uncomfortable and unpleasant I found a large part of this film. I talk about claustrophobia. I felt like I couldn't breathe. I needed to get out of the movie theater. I needed to get some air. It really generated this place that was really an awful, awful, awful place to be. So filmmaking wise, I think, you know, just props to them for achieving that level. Overall, I think the movie, lost its way a little bit towards the end. I think if it had been more about what we got at the beginning, they're just, again, I'm being really careful here to not expose the movie's overall plot and arc, because I think there's something to be said for the way it plays out.
Yazdi, I'm dying to hear what you thought, because I feel like this is a Yazdi movie through and through.
It is. I mean, I think... I live when we go to watch the cinemas, I live for movies which are transcendent, which kind of pull you out of your seat and make you forget that you're watching a movie, and that take you to some other place which fundamentally change the circuitry in your being. And, you know, Brie Larson, who I love to death, and I'd heard things about this movie being very uncomfortable, very emotional, all of those things. Thankfully, I did not know anything about the story. And I urge you, please don't even read the description of the movie, because it gives away a lot. But in spite of that, that movie completely broke me. It just broke me at the halfway point, and it continued to repeatedly break me. And I think it's very difficult to do that, because we are so cynical and we see things coming. And the whole point of movies is to make you, you know, to get to your vulnerabilities. And I think it's because the movie looks it's all in the tone. I think somebody else who could have taken the story and made a movie would have made such a cheap little film out of it, or would have made a very ineffective fake film out of it. But I think the reason why this movie is so good is it's all in the tone. And I don't know if it's this director, it's certainly the actors, but it looks at evil so casually that it's very effective, because you realize that evil, when it presents itself as evil, is not, you can fight it, you can reason with it. But when evil is everyday, when it's commonplace, how you deal with it becomes that much more difficult. And I think, as horrifying as the first part of the movie is, ultimately, and again, I don't know if this may be a spoiler, but ultimately this is a movie about healing, and it's a movie about recovery. And the great power of this movie is that I've been thinking about it constantly since I watched it. And not only was I moved to tears in the cinema, every time I've been thinking about it, I've been moved to tears, because it's all the little things that are not said in the movie. And it's all about, in a way, each one of us are recovering from things, small or big. In this case, it's something very big, but it speaks to, you know, being human is ultimately, and I know I'm sounding corny even as I'm saying it, but to be human is to ultimately trying your best to rise above what's happened to you. And this movie does such a great job with that. This is a transcendent film experience. This might be the best film of the year for me. I mean, I cannot rate this higher.
I don't disagree with you, Yazdi. I mean, I think you say it's a film about recovery. For me, it's a film about love and sacrifice. Mm-hmm. The ultimate sacrifice. And I can't say enough about the acting, because this film lives and dies by that central performance by Brie Larson and Jacob Tremblay. I mean, Brie Larson, you know, we've talked a lot. I think we've all been great cheerleaders of Brie Larson for a long, long time. And Short Term 12, I think, was on all of our top lists. It must take, I can't imagine what it takes to play this character, because there's so many facets to it.
Yeah. I think what made the movie so effective, in addition to the performances, is that the whole thing is from the viewpoint of the little boy.
Hmm.
And I didn't catch that until much, much later on in the movie, but clearly this is his story, and the characters in the world around him play out as they do, but you see it almost, the injustice of the whole situation, and the reason that I think we all felt so emotionally bound to the beginning of the movie, I think, was very much because the director was deliberately putting us where the boy was, as opposed to the adult in the situation, where I think, you know, the adult could obviously handle the gravity and has more context, but the boy, it just made me want to scream the whole situation with frustration. For me, that's partly why I think the movie was so impactful on me.
I mean, it's interesting. I can't think of a movie in recent memory which relies so much on one actor. In this case, it's the young, you know, Jacob Tremblay. I mean, the movie lives and dies by him. And, you
Correct.
Know, he's not precocious. He's not, you know, acting beyond his age. He's not going for cute. He just is. And on the face of it, I was very much impressed by him initially when I watched the movie. And then, you know, a lot of what the Brie Larson's character does seemed kind of odd to me, or not overly odd, but just seemed a little, you know, off register. And then the more I've been thinking about it, I realize how much greater an accomplishment her performance has been, because, again, it's hard to talk about this movie without giving anything away, but I've seen in situations... Go on.
I was just going to say, maybe we can do a little bit of a spoiler alert. Let's not give away the whole plot, but let's allow ourselves to talk a little bit more openly. Does that sound okay? Because this is really hard to talk about. So, spoiler alert. If you haven't seen the movie, go see it, then come back and listen to the rest of this discussion.
Yeah, absolutely. Go see this movie. Please go see this movie and then come back and listen to us. But, I mean, I guess the premise of the movie is that, you know, the mother character here is a captor. Somebody has, you know, abducted her when she was a teenager, when she was 17, has been keeping her in his garden shed, you know, for the last 7 years imprisoned. And, you know, that's where she has the baby, and the boy is now 5 years old, and she cannot create a make-believe world for the son anymore. And she has to somehow try and find a way for at least him to escape, if not the both of them. And the movie kind of plays out from that. But I've seen situations, and this happens a lot with people who are caretakers for somebody who is very sick, where people devote their 3, 4, 5 years of their life being beside somebody who is very, very ill. And when that person passes on, the person who was taking care of them, their life has no purpose.
Correct.
And they just completely crash. I mean, they crash because they don't have to be the strong one anymore. They don't have to constantly be there next to that person. And when you realize what Brie Larson's situation goes through, once she realizes that she does not have to be brave for her son anymore, she allows herself to collapse. And that, to me, is so seldom handled in movie. It's so beautifully done. You know, you only realize it in the hindsight, and it's beautiful. It's just something else.
I mean, even the direction is absolutely stunning in this movie. The scenes in the room versus then when we come back to the room are absolutely incredible to watch. The scale and the detail, and again, fantastic dialogue. It's easy, Yazdi, you said it, you know, there's no precociousness here. There's no preciousness here. This is handled very, very, very delicately for a situation that's really tough. And then the other piece that really impressed me is our curiosity as a public for people who end up in this situation, and the numbness we have around realizing these are people with lives, and then they have to go on with their lives beyond that point. And then how many people are still in this situation?
Yeah. There's a great scene towards the end where the little boy, you know, confesses to some other character besides his mom, and he says, "I love you." And, you know,
I broke.
And the camera could have really milked it for what it was worth and gotten on their faces. But the camera is really far away. It almost does not want to intrude on this very delicate moment. And again, it's a very risky choice, you know, to kind of underplay this moment, but it's that much more powerful because you are watching it from a distance. So I agree that the decisions made in terms of how to make things play out. And I've read a few reviews of the movie since, and a lot of people have complained that the second part of the movie kind of deflates.
And that's where I was going to go.
But I think it's to the movie's credit that it completely eschews that typical story arc where the third arc is where everything ratchets up. Actually, things ratchet up in the middle of the movie. But then the rest of the movie is about, I think, about just getting on.
Well, and part of the reason I think a spoiler alert was apt here because I did want to talk about. So there is the scene in the room, and then there is the scene, the movie outside the room. And number one, again, I want to nitpick, but these are things that genuinely affected my belief in the situation. Was I think the escape scenario was a little unbelievable to me. Now, I think there were two scenarios that could have played out. I think the first scenario was the right way to go thematically to keep the tension. I think the second way, the actual escape, I had a really hard time believing that the captor would have fallen for that. But nonetheless, that bothered me a little bit. And then I think once the movie opened up, the dialogue didn't quite work. I think there were a couple of issues that I had with the Brie Larson character's behavior. Now, again, she'd been through enormous trauma here, but I think there was a little bit missed out in terms of getting us from one place to the next. So, I think that the movie just wasn't as well crafted in that second part as it was in the beginning. And the whole way that the dialogue is spoken in room, you know, the movie's called Room deliberately, not The Room, A Room, or it's you know, they have this strange language between each other because they are in this confined environment. And, you know, that's the kind of thing that can happen. But once the movie gets out of that, I struggled with it a little bit.
Yeah, so I didn't struggle as much, Joe, because two things. The first point you made about the way the escape happens. I mean, remember, this is a person, a captor, who believes that he can keep someone hidden away in a shed for 7 years, right?
But
it happens.
This happens all the time.
It just happened.
A basement, maybe. A shed, not so much. But
happened in a house.
Yeah, it happened
Three women.
Three women. When was it? In Ohio?
I thought they were in a basement.
It was
in Ohio.
No, it was in a house. Okay. All boarded up,
I assumed
up,
it was in a basement, but okay.
No. So that's one thing. So these people are crazy. So I don't have any doubt that the captor is crazy. And then secondly, remember what we're seeing is, and this is what I loved about it, what we're seeing is a 24-year-old girl who's had to raise a child in the absence of the world around her. And she only knows what she knows when she was 17 because she's been not part of the world for the last 7 years. So I could very easily buy into that concept.
Yeah, maybe I'm being a little nitpicky, but...
Yeah.
Okay, anything else or should we wrap this one up? We gave away so many spoilers now.
Well, we had to give the spoiler alert. Yeah, this one was almost impossible to talk about sensibly without.
Yeah, I agree. So, Joe, why don't you go first?
Certainly a better first half of the movie than the second half. I think it was just far more accomplished early on. And, you know, the second half was dealing with different themes and perhaps I think was almost a letdown given how unpleasant a place I was in for the first 40 minutes. But nonetheless, this is a tremendous piece of work. Brie Larson, what a tour de force performance that she's had in this movie. And like we've spoken about, Jacob Tremblay, brilliant stuff from both. This director directed Frank, which I enjoyed very much. This is a talent to watch. I don't think he's got an extensive filmography, but certainly knows how to put us in a place as an audience. And for that, I'm going to give it a stingy 8 out of 10.
Yes, Steve. So put it right.
Yeah, so Roger Ebert always used to say that we think we are better than our emotions, but we are not. So, we are not superior to our emotions. You know, what you feel is what you feel. And I cannot deny the place this movie took me to, both in a bad way and a good way. And none of this has happened to me. Thank God none of this has happened to me. And yet I could deeply, at the most fundamental atomic level, empathize with this situation. And I think that's the movie's great achievement. It could be the best movie of the year for me, an easy 9 out of 10. And I don't give 9 out of 10s. This is only my second 9 out of 10 this year. What a human film this is. I mean, ultimately, to me, it speaks to, you know, the big themes. You know, it's about a pet and it's about unconditional love and it's about somebody just, how do you recover from bad things? This is what helps you recover, you know, some constancy, somebody being there for you. That's how you recover. And that's the big stuff, man. This is an amazement of a film. I can't recommend it enough.
So I haven't been in a movie theater where it's so silent and then something happens, then the audience literally like shouts at the movie. And there was one point in the movie when the person behind us like,
well,
literally
there was a tension
reacted.
Release.
Yeah, reacted to something in the movie. I won't give it away, I won't spoil it. Delicate, profound, mind-blowing, and one of the most effective movies I've watched this year, if not in the last few years. Ugh. 10. I'm giving it a 10.
Boom, there it is.
Yeah.
Wow.
Phenomenal. Wow. It's not a pleasant movie to watch.
No.
But it is one of the most effective movies I've seen this year.
I mean, take this concept and think of what somebody else would have done with it. You know, tried to appeal to your sympathy.
Or make it a Lifetime movie or something sappy and revengeful or...
I don't know, it has...
It's profound.
It's the rarest thing. I mean, I'm almost afraid to make too much out of it because there are people who will expect too much and not get it. But it has that one thing which is so missing in most movies, which is emotional honesty. It just feels it's not abusing the situation to manipulate you as the audience member. It's just presenting it and asking you to make your own judgment, I think.
It's so restrained.
It's very, very, it's remarkably restrained. So, yeah. Please go see this one.
I couldn't
speak. Well, you've already seen it if you're listening to this part of the podcast.
Yeah, that's true.
So, so, wow. Okay. Room. Yes, it was a very unpleasant place to be.
And honestly, I'm going to stop watching movies if Brie Larson and Jacob Tremblay don't get nominated. Jacob Tremblay, I don't know. That will take a bigger thing. But really, what more does Brie Larson have to do? Honestly, yeah. Come on, people.
Well, if Kwangjine Wallace could get a nomination, then I think Jacob Tremblay certainly deserves the opportunity here. Because it is a solid performance. And I always have a hard time with kids being nominated because I think a lot of what they do is directed. You know, I don't know that they have the emotional depth to... I speak as myself, you know, as a kid, I just didn't have the emotional sophistication to portray a lot of things that I think kids portray in movies. So, but here, you're right. It's done without overplaying it. It's just, it's a beautifully judged performance. And, you know, the chemistry between him and Brie Larson was so believable and real. So good stuff. Good stuff. Okay. Mail at movierollers.com. Twitter.com/movierollers, Facebook.com/movierollers as well. Until then, too many movies, too little time. A good night from me.
And me.
And me as well.